Log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for listening to Community Radio for Portland. It's KBOO Portland. 1 minute before 11 o'clock, and coming up in a half hour, join us for Words and Pictures. Today, host SW Concert is joined by author Lauren Redness, author of Thunder and Lightning, Weather, Past, Present, Future, and animation Show of Shows curator Ron Diamond. But first, at 11, Leanne Krantz hosts Between the Covers, where today we welcome Portland author Margaret Malone to celebrate the launch of her debut short story collection. And that is coming up next. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, please go to kboo.fm/give to find out how you can have your contribution to KBOO doubled.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pollinating Rios Vivos, Thursday, November 12th, 7 p.m. at Reed's Volum Lecture Hall in Portland. The Beehive Design Collective will talk about how storytelling and art is used while building solidarity with Rios Vivos, Colombia, the social movement of dam-impacted communities that struggle for the defense of their territories and rivers and for an energy model by and for the people. Again, that's Pollinating Rios Vivos on Thursday, November 12th, 7 p.m. at the Volum Lecture Hall on the Reed College campus, 3203 Southeast Woodstock in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Well, buzz, buzz, buzz goes the bumblebee.
Tweedledee-ledee goes the bird. Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program featuring interviews with authors of fiction and nonfiction. I'm your host this week, Leanne Krantz. I'm joined in the studio by Portland author Margaret Malone, here to talk about her debut short story collection, People Like You, published by local press Atelier 26. The book launches Tuesday, November 17th, and is currently available in your local bookshop and everywhere else. And Margaret Malone will be at Powell's Books downtown next Sunday, November 22nd, in conversation with Lydia Yuknovich. Margaret Malone's stories and essays have been published in the Missouri Review, Oregon Humanities, Swink, Propeller Quarterly, and elsewhere. She is a co-host of the artist and literary gathering Share. She lives in Portland with her two rambunctious children and her husband, the filmmaker Brian Padian, who created an awesome atmospheric, moody book trailer for People Like You, in which Margaret Malone perfectly describes the tone and terrain of this book better than I ever could. She says, "What interests me most as a writer are the everyday, mundane ways that we as humans come together and fall apart. I'm always particularly interested in the even small ways that we are selfish or kind, the ways we love each other and hurt each other again and again. To me, that's the thing about writing I love the most, the opportunity to examine that, not from a philosophical point, but from inside a character. To get to be the person that does the wrong thing or says the wrong thing, or to be the character that's on the receiving end of being told the exact right thing they needed to hear at the perfect time. That, to me, is the real beauty and magic of writing, those small moments in the way that we are human." Welcome, Margaret Malone.
Thanks, Leanne. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I loved it.
Thank you.
Excellent collection.
Thank you.
Start to finish. So, from a reader's perspective, mm-hmm. I found some commonalities among your characters in this collection. They seem to be at odds, with the world and with what's happening around them. And they're either unable or unwilling to follow that human social script, you know, what's expected of them, or the niceties that they're asked to perform in order to get through a situation. So I was curious, why is that particular point of view interesting to you as a writer?
I think it's interesting because I feel like that terrain, that sort of middle terrain, isn't explored as often in the media. For to me, it always seems to me like the characters we see are sort of like, you know, really out there and super gregarious and social, and that's okay, or they're like really hyper inward to the point of, you know, that being its own sort of strangeness no one can relate to. And I was just interested in the ways that I find that I'm not one thing all the time. And so I have felt the ways that many of those characters have felt around other people, but I'm not like that all the time. And so I thought it was interesting to sort of put it on the page and see what would happen if I just sort of let that awkwardness be awkward without it having to be one extreme or the other. And what I found when I get feedback from people is that it's actually really familiar. I thought, I'm probably the only one who's ever felt that way.
Oh, no.
And then once I started reading my stories and hearing from people, I was like, oh, no, a lot of people. And I think people would say to me, I've totally felt that way, too, as if it was a sort of like secret thing because no one really talks about it.
We don't admit it.
No, I know. And so it's actually been. So that's why I did it as sort of like a personal, like just to let that awkwardness be. I think that's interesting. But it's actually turned out to be the real fascinating thing has been how common it is. So.
Yeah, it seems universal.
Yeah.
You know, and it's liberating to have to read it and not feel so alone in that, in all of our foibles and frailties.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. You know, the scenes that you set, the characters, the circumstances, it's all very rooted in reality. It feels really real. We've all been in these situations, it feels like, even if perhaps not exactly the same. But I wonder, how do you stay grounded in reality? Because as writers, you know, you can go anywhere, get as big as you want. Do you have ways that you keep grounded in that true experience, that everyday, as you say, mundane experience?
Inside the story, you mean?
Yeah. As a writer,
the way I stay grounded is it's usually comes in the rewriting. So the sort of like first and the first drafts are usually god awful, and then there's like the second and third drafts where I'm like, okay, I've hit the where I kind of want to go, and then the multiple drafts beyond that are like, okay, so here's the thing I'm trying to do on the page, but I need to remind the reader where we are. And so I try and go into really minute, familiar detail that like everybody would have in common. Like, for whatever reason, the thing I'm thinking of right now is in the first story, People Like You, there's a scene where the couple goes into the bathroom and explores a medicine cabinet, the narrator does. And I was like, okay, well, this will ground everybody because almost everyone in our culture anyway has opened up a medicine cabinet and seen the sort of like hodgepodge of things that are in there. And so if I could just take a minute on the page and like slow you down, and here are the things that we're looking at together, I'm going to bring you into the scene with me. And then maybe you'll go to the next place with me if I can take you through the medicine cabinet, because you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
That brings up an interesting point. In some of the advanced reviews of this book, People Like You, readers talk about how your stories are perfectly constructed and that you're like a master of craft in that way. And it made me wonder, you know, writing is such a creative, intuitive sort of searching activity. And I wonder, how do you balance structure, creating a really beautifully structured short story, and your creativity and that room to play? When does the structure come in to your process? From the beginning or later on?
Probably, what a cool question. Probably, I've never thought about this, so I'm totally making this up right now as we're having this conversation. I think for me, it comes later. I tend to get stories by, like, I call them photographs almost. Like, I'll either get a picture in my head, or I will walk or drive by something, or and like I almost like I take a mental picture of it and it stays with me. And so then I go and I write, and then it's in the writing of exploring that sort of feeling that was there that eventually I'll find the structure. So structure for me comes after, but it also is everything to me. Just the way my brain works, and because I write realism and I love realism, to me the structure is essential. I just feel like there's this quote I used to have above my desk from Haruki Murakami that says something like, "You should be very kind when you explain something." And I love that he said that, because it just reminded me as a writer that I'm writing to a reader. And as much as I love reading things that other writers are doing that are more experimental or just like forcing the reader to sort of do more work, I love the idea of like being responsible for shaping the world in a way that is accessible. And then maybe within that world, pushing buttons occasionally. But the structure to me is important. And I like building that. I think it's actually an important part of the process, because it gives me parameters. And so I have to figure out a way to make something work within those parameters. And I find that really, though confounding and upsetting sometimes, like, I find it very satisfying.
Another common thread throughout this collection, though they're not linked short stories, there's a cohesion in that no matter what the characters are dealing with, and they're in ruts, you know, and they're not exactly where they want to be. Sometimes life's happened to them, and they're sort of drifting without much resistance. But you always are able to surprise the reader, and maybe even the character, by injecting hope. There's hope throughout these stories. And the way you bring it into a story, it's like the way life brings hope to our lives. You know, you don't expect it, and it's suddenly there, and it just transports you. It takes you out of that place that you are. How do you do that?
Oh my goodness.
Would you say that's something to do with craft, or is that just your gift? And I'll say the word gift. You don't have to.
I'm not saying that. I think part of that, I can't answer that question, because I don't know that I know. Mm-hmm. I can say that I am I'm pretty crunchy on the inside. I call myself a pessimistic optimist, which sounds funny, but like I really do believe that that's what I am, because the foundation of who I am is actually an optimist. But I'm completely pessimistic, like the rest of the building is pessimistic, but the foundation is optimistic. And so I think that probably is what's coming through.
It is, yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of life is really like that. Like, a lot of it is so hard, so much harder than anyone ever tells you it's going to be. And then you start to commiserate with people and they're like, yeah, it's really hard. And you're like, no one ever told me it was going to be this hard. But then you get these tiny little blips that are often, they're not always these big, huge things that happen that give you hope. They're oftentimes very small, unexpected gifts, sometimes from strangers. And that just, like, in my own life, that's what brings me, like, such a beautiful feeling of connectedness. And so that is occasionally what I will try and sort of, like, plant into one of the stories. I just, like, plant is too heavy a word. It's not really that dramatic, but I'm hoping that floats in occasionally, because otherwise, my God, what is the point?
And it does. I mean, that's what I really loved about this collection, people like you. You really meet us where we really are in the everyday, and you bring in that magic, that what makes our life beautiful despite all the issues.
Thank you.
It's very satisfying as a reader. Life affirming. It was beautiful. We're speaking with Margaret Malone, one of our finest local writers, here to talk about her debut short story collection, People Like You, just releasing next Tuesday. by Atelier 26 Press, one of our local presses. Margaret, you've agreed to read a little something for us today.
I have, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to read just sort of a early middle chunk of the short story, The Only One. Here we go. The only decent way to get out of class in middle school is to visit the guidance counselor's office. Before I stopped going, I used to see Miss Olson once a week, which was as often as I could go without people suspecting I had real problems. I liked spending time in her office. It was different than every other part of the school. She had green, spindly plants in ceramic pots sitting on top of the orange radiator under a long, dirty window, and it always smelled like peppermint gum. I liked being in there, but I never told her much of anything. I never told her that I spent a lot of time imagining all the people who lived before me, the cavemen and Spanish explorers and families in covered wagons and cowboys and Indians and gold rushers and hippies and yuppies, the whole of human history, imagining that all of them had probably had a lot of sex, and how that so many people, it seemed likely to me that there was no patch of land on this earth, except maybe parts of Mount Everest in Antarctica, that hadn't been used by someone at some point to have sex with somebody else. I never told Miss Olson of how I'd stopped showering or about my mom saying I was starting to smell. I never told her I thought about Mr. Casals, the dad of the two kids I babysit for, that I thought about my tongue and his mouth because maybe a man knew how to kiss without it being so gross and meat-like. There is a boy my age who likes me. His name is Glenn. He has a set of monster braces and plays the clarinet in band. Not a great combination. I know he likes me because one time the phone rang when I was just home from school. I was listening to the microwave make my popcorn. When I picked up, the phone said, "Sylvie, this is Glenn Bell." There was nothing to say, so I didn't say anything back. But then he didn't say anything either. So finally I said, "What do you want?" That's when he started singing that Stevie Wonder song. He sang, "I just called to say I love you." It was beyond embarrassing. I thought I might die right there, listening to Glenn sing Stevie over the popping of microwave popcorn. He sang, "I just called to say how much I care." I hung up. I'd first met Glenn Bell a few weeks earlier at Mr. Pomfrey's annual spring student piano recital. I was playing Clementi's Sonatina Opus 36, number 3, just that first page and a half through the main section to the first repeat and back again to the loud, quiet, big deal ending. Glenn Bell's little brother was playing Go Tell Aunt Rhody and Lightly Row, the worst, most boring songs ever, but everyone has to play them that first year, and then everyone in the audience claps like it's a performance of a lifetime. After the recital, when all the kids were milling around the refreshment table in their uncomfortable dress clothes, meaning, Mr. Pomfrey says, anything but jeans, this kid with a face full of metal and dark blue eyes came up to me. I recognized him as one of the eighth grade boys from school. "I'm Glenn Bell," he said. "Nice chops." He offered me his hand to shake. I didn't shake it. He was obviously a weirdo. "I should know," he said. "I'm a musician, too." We both stared at the refreshment table, and I reached for one of the chocolate chip cookies on the dessert tray, but my mom saw from across the room where she was talking to Mrs. Pomfrey and stared her eyes into mine like, "I'm watching you." So I moved my hand over to the carrot and celery stick tray and grabbed a few of those instead. Glenn said, "I play clarinet." He was wearing a suit and tie, which seemed like overdoing it to me because he wasn't even playing in the recital. His brother was. I said, "I know. You're in band." My mom's back was turned for a second, so I grabbed a cracker with Cheese Whiz on top. "Yeah, jazz band too," he said. "You ever seen us?" I didn't want to talk with cracker in my mouth, so I shook my head no, but of course I'd seen them. The whole school was forced to sit through a set of their squawking at the mandatory assemblies before winter and summer breaks. As if band isn't bad enough, a kid's got to go and further muck up his prospects at life by playing in the school jazz band, a group with the unfortunate name of Take the H Train, which I think was supposed to be some kind of reference to the H in Huntley Hills, but really, everyone said, just seemed like encouragement to use heroin. "We have a piano at our house, for my brother," Glenn said. "Yeah," I said, "we have one too." It was like talking to a houseplant. "That's how I practice?" No, he said, I mean, you could come over sometime, and you could play piano, and I could play clarinet. His hand reached across the refreshment table and grabbed a chocolate chip cookie and handed it to me. You're good enough. I don't always like to play with other people because most people can't keep up with me, but we could really, you know, jam. When I didn't say anything, he said, I think we'd make beautiful music together. When I didn't say anything, he said, that was supposed to be a joke. Anyway, bye. After Glenn walked off and I finished almost dying, I somehow got stuck talking to Laura Schmiegel's grandfather, who smelled like menthol rub, and I kept trying to figure out how to eat that chocolate chip cookie without my mom seeing. Later, at home, I thought about my tongue and Glenn Bell's mouth. I wasn't sure how well it would fit in there with all that metal, or if maybe my lips would get all cut up. All I knew was that everything would be dark because my eyes would be closed, because that's how people kiss, which doesn't make any sense. If I ever get my tongue into someone else's mouth again, I'm going to keep my eyes open and see what the whole deal looks like.
That was Margaret Malone reading from her new short story collection, People Like You, out this month by Atelier 26, reading from the story, The Only One. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Don't give up on Glenn just yet, people. Your book is hilarious.
Thank
I will
you.
Say that. And I recently read an interview. It really whet my appetite. I must ask you about this.
Uh-oh.
You said regarding humor
uh-huh.
that Steve Allman gave you some of the best comedic writing advice you've ever received.
Uh-huh.
And in that interview,
uh-huh.
you didn't tell me
uh-huh.
what it was. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, I mean, he probably said something like brilliant in a sentence. And the way it landed on me was more abstract. But basically, it was the nutshell version is that you don't make fun of your characters. Don't have a laugh at the expense of one of your characters. I had a first draft of a middle draft of a story that is in the book that I workshopped with him. And that was just the best piece of advice I could have gotten, because I realized I was using one of the characters as a springboard for a laugh, and it completely took away from the innate humor of the story itself. And so basically his writing advice, which I use it all the time now, is you don't make fun of your characters. Like, I would never make fun of someone in real life, so mm-hmm. why would I make fun of one of my characters? And so the humor has to come out of something real. It can't be you. I can't be like using someone to ping pong the humor off of. It's just, it doesn't work. And it takes away from the reality and the honesty, I think, of the story. It pushes people away.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Do you love all of your characters?
I love all of them. Mm-hmm. I love every single one of them. Yeah. Yeah.
And with love comes respect. So that makes sense.
Oh, totally. I love them all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Another thing that really stands out in the collection, People Like You, your dialogue it's how people talk. And I first became aware of your writing when one of your stories, Saving the Animals,
uh-huh.
was published in the collection, the Forest Avenue Press anthology, The Night and the Rain and the River.
Mm-hmm.
Your dialogue made me crack up out loud. I'm wondering, how do you do that? And again, how do you do this?
I don't know how to answer that exactly. I think, so a couple things. One thing is that I feel like in real life, except on the radio, a lot of times people are having two different conversations at once or multiple conversations at once, because humans are not very good listeners naturally. It's something we have to really work hard at. And so I think sometimes realistic dialogue is helpful, even if it doesn't for me always end up in the final draft. But when I'm just even working through a draft, I'll just have people often saying, you know, a lot of times you have your agenda, especially in relationships, whether it's intimate relationships or parents, family, whatever. People aren't always good at listening and talking at the same time. And so that's one thing I play around with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I do is I just edit my dialogue way down. Like, I try not to have a lot of stuff in there unless it's important or reveals character or is just like so right on that it's like, oh, I don't care. It has no purpose, but it's got to be in there. You know, hopefully, I hope I do that. That's my goal.
You have a real knack for it, I will say.
Thanks.
You know, when you do what you do, your stories are, I think Lydia Yuknovich, I'm going to steal from her. She, in one of your blurbs, mm-hmm. she mentioned that your writing is alive. Mm-hmm. And I really felt that. It's just the reader is there in the car, in the uncomfortable car ride or the doctor's appointment. I mean, we feel like we're in the room. And I'm wondering, it seems like I would say that the sensory detail that you use is quite, I invented this word today.
Oh, goody.
Spanbowerian.
It totally is Spanbowerian.
Okay. After Tom
hashtag,
Spanbauer.
Hashtag that.
Your former writing
yes.
teacher,
yes.
mentor,
yes.
Tom Spanbauer.
The man who lives in my heart. Yes, totally.
Did he impart that
but honey,
on
you? Honey, you do too, Brian. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was imagining as a reader yes. that perhaps those skills were taught in that basement room around that table. Would you agree?
He talks a lot about that. Mm-hmm. I was always drawn to that kind of writing anyway. Mm-hmm. I love realism. But Tom is excellent. Tom Spanbauer is an excellent instructor especially when it comes to teaching a writer to keep the reader present in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's so much a part of how he writes, and he has such a lovely and gentle teaching style when it comes to like letting the writer dance their way around that again and again and again until they really hit it. And so yes, totally was his and elevated by him, and yes, no question.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, your writing is your own. I don't mean to imply.
No. Oh my God.
You're one of his.
I would love to be associated with him any and all times.
But when I read and speak with writers who have participated in that dangerous writing uh-huh. group, I must admit that their writing really lingers mm-hmm. within my mind. I can feel it. I can access that long after the conversation or the reading. So
yeah. I mean, that's
a very interesting. I don't have the guts to do it yet. So I admire people who can really do that.
That's Tom. That's his gift. I mean, mm-hmm. and he just is teaching us as we listen.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So please tell us about some upcoming exciting launch events you have planned.
Yeah. So the pub date is the 17th, which is Tuesday, but I have a launch party planned for Saturday, the 21st. And that's going to be at Food, Ford and Drink. And it's free and open to the public. And it's really just a party is what it is. So I'm going to do a little bit of a reading, but we're going to have the Dickel Brothers are going to play some awesome old time music, which I'm completely psyched about. And it's going to be from about 7 to 10. So please come if you can. And then the following night, I'm going to read at Powell's in conversation with Lydia Yuknovich, which is like, I'm completely freaking out about it. I'm so excited. Yeah. And then I have my sort of West Coast book tour is happening in January. And you can go to my website, margaretmalone.com, to see more events about that.
And I'll also direct folks to the website of the publisher that
yes.
has some information. One of our fine local presses, Atelier 26 Books. That's Atelier26books.com. That press is run by Mark Allen Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
My hero.
Yay. Good to hear. Well, thank you, Margaret Malone, for being our guest.
Thank you so much, Leanne. I've had such a pleasure being here.
Good. Your collection, People Like You, is really, really great.
Thank you.
So I encourage you all to read it. Thank you to our engineer, Rock. I'm Leanne Kranz. Thank you for listening to KBOO. I would love to alert you to an upcoming special on Between the Covers during our winter membership drive. On Thursday, December 3rd, we're going to have a full hour interview with Sandra Cisneros internationally beloved author of The House on Mongo Street. She has a new memoir, A House of My Own, Stories from My Life. Sandra was here for Wordstock. She came to KBOO and signed some books. We'll be giving away to those who call in during that show. So thank you all for listening, and please stay tuned for Words and Pictures.
KBOO Community Radio presents Evil, Cruel Thing Attacking Humanity and Controlled by the Super Rich versus You and Me. This will be an evening on ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. This film and talk will take place on Thursday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater here in Portland. Learn about how this huge secret political entity, ALEC, creates legislation to keep wages low, to fill prisons. It bankrupts schools and poisons the air, land, and water. Union reps, teachers, activists, journalists, and others will join moderator and KBOO news director, Jenka Soderberg, in a panel discussion on People versus ALEC. Again, that's a film and talk to learn about ALEC on Thursday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. And more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, and welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and in just a few minutes, I'll be joined by Ron Diamond. He's the curator of the Turing Festival Animation Show of Shows. That'll be screening at Cinema 21 all week, and Ron will be appearing in Portland at Cinema 21 tomorrow, Friday the 13th, for Q&As at all three shows. But first, the Wordstock Literary Festival is back. It's been revived by Literary Arts, and I had the pleasure of attending last weekend and meeting with author Lauren Redness. She has an